This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. In Iraq, teams of election officials are working around the clock to tabulate the ballots from Sunday's elections. Despite the persistence of the insurgency, many hope the elections will mark a turning point for Iraq and encourage democratic reforms elsewhere in the region. In a moment, we'll speak with an Arab journalist about reaction in the Middle East and whether it's shifted the debate from criticism of American policies to enthusiasm over a free democratic vote. After that, we'll focus on the challenges for American policy in Iraq. Is it now time to establish clear goals tied to a withdrawal of American forces? What's the appropriate exit strategy from Iraq? At the end of the program, we'll talk about a controversy over health care costs and workers' rights. One company is testing its employees for nicotine to make sure they don't smoke, even at home. But first, U.S. policy on Iraq after the elections. Should we stay the course until the new government is secure, till Iraqi forces are trained to take over, till power and water work properly and the economy improves? Should the focus now be on withdrawal? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. To begin, we turn to Rami Khoury, editor-at-large for the Lebanese newspaper The Daily Star, and he joins us by phone from his home in Beirut. Good to have you back on the program, Rami Khoury.
Nice to be with you. Thank you.
Have Sunday's elections changed the debate in the Arab world?
I think the debate has changed among some people in the Arab world. It was very striking yesterday, the day after the election, to hear people. I was talking to people from Bahrain, from Jordan, Syria, Lebanon, and people who were very, very critical of what the United States has done in Iraq and resent it and oppose it. But they were struck by the enthusiasm of so many of the Iraqis who voted. And I think it's a question of not being more royalist than the king, that if a lot of Iraqis are voting enthusiastically and want to take command of their future, then most people in the Arab world, I think, are going to go along with this.
Yes, you wrote in a piece published today, Arabs have little choice other than to support the will of the Iraqi majority and help the process along if they can. Quiet soul-searching in many Arab minds and lands is as intense this week as the triumphalist exuberance of the American administration.
Yes, I think the last almost 2 years in Iraq have been defined by very strong criticism of what the United States has done in most of the Arab world. You've had some people in the Arab world supporting the U.S., but the majority have been critical. People don't like Western armies coming in here and changing regimes and redrawing maps and changing values and reconfiguring nations. But again, what happened Sunday was the exuberance, the joy, the enthusiasm of so many Iraqis, not all Iraqis, because many Iraqis boycotted, many Iraqis were not completely involved in the process, but there was so much enthusiasm by so many people that it really set the tone for how people should look at Iraq. And I think the question now is not so much about the bad things the U.S. did in invading Iraq, but the question is, how do we work with the Iraqis to get out of the situation, end the American occupation, and let the Iraqis take command of their own future?
Are people looking at Afghanistan, at the election for the Palestinian Authority, the territories there, and Iraq, and seeing a pattern?
No, they're not. Iraq and Palestine are completely different situations. Palestine had an election for president in 1996. The Palestinians for years have had internal elections among the groups, checks and balances. Palestine has been occupied by Israel for 37 years. It's a completely different situation and should not be equated at all. If the spin doctors among the neoconservatives in Washington equate it, they're free to do that, but it's not part of reality out here. Afghanistan is also a different situation. Afghanistan is not that impressive for most people in the world outside of the Beltway. People look at the Afghan president, he can barely walk out of his palace, and when he does, he's surrounded by American army people to protect him. So it's a very difficult situation in Afghanistan, which is now the world's biggest opium producer, and the drug lords or warlords are ruling in many of the provincial areas. It's not a very good example of a transition to real stable democracy. Iraq, we have to see if the Americans truly turn over power and start the process of withdrawal at some point in the coming year, and the Iraqis genuinely regain sovereignty, it could be a different situation. We cannot rule out the possibility that what President Bush is talking about may actually happen, that there may be a democratic, a stable Iraq, and it may have an impact on other people in the Arab world. That's a possibility which we shouldn't rule out.
You also wrote in another piece about the difference. You mentioned the resentment of democracy under the guns of Western occupiers. But at the same time, you report on a hotel conference in Beirut at a hotel room about the rule of law.
Well, exactly. What struck me, and this is my syndicated column that I write every week, and this week I was contrasting the two big events that happened Sunday, this extraordinary election in Iraq that the whole world's media covered, and with a lot of commentary by leaders and people all over the world, and then this meeting which I attended in a hotel in Beirut with about 40 civil society activists and lawyers and a few professors looking at the rule of law and how to improve the judiciary and the legal system in Arab countries, what's wrong with it, how to fix it, and how to affirm the rule of law to counter the rule of autocratic leaderships and sometimes authoritarian, even despotic regimes in some cases. So the question is, will the Arab world become democratic through the force of American armies, or will it become democratic and stable through the painstaking day-to-day work of thousands and thousands of Arabs who have been working for democracy and civil rights and civil society and equality for decades and decades on end? I think the reality is that some combination of Western pushing and prodding and cajoling and domestic activism is going to be the combination that helps us achieve our goals.
Rami Khoury, thanks as always.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Rami Khoury, editor-at-large for The Daily Star, which is a newspaper based in Lebanon, a syndicated columnist based there in Beirut. We reached into his home in the Lebanese capital. Well, for the remainder of the program, or much of the remainder of the program, we're going to be talking about exit strategies from Iraq. Thursday night, in his State of the Union address, President Bush is expected to outline plans for American involvement in post-election Iraq. So far, the administration has set no date for withdrawal. The Iraqi president, Ghazi al-Yawar, said today it would be complete nonsense for foreign troops to leave straight away. That said, to maintain legitimacy, the newly elected Iraqi government will likely push the U.S. to come up with a clear-cut exit strategy. Now we're going to hear two perspectives on how the U.S. should proceed. We'll begin with Dan Senior, the former spokesman for the Coalition Provisional Authority in Baghdad, and he joins us here in Studio 3A. Thanks very much for being with us.
Good to be with you this afternoon.
How do Sunday's elections change the U.S. role in Iraq, and looking ahead, change U.S. hopes, expectations for leaving Iraq?
Well, I think one of the most important things that resulted from Sunday's election results is that it sent a message around the world that this canard that's out there, that Arabs, Muslims, are not capable of democracy, is really an absurd notion. Many people were sort of biased against what we were doing in Iraq and in Afghanistan and in the Palestinian territories with this idea that Arabs wouldn't know how to operate in a free society, wouldn't embrace it, would view it as a Western intrusion into their lives. And I think Sunday turned that on its head. I do think the Palestinian elections did turn that notion on its head, too, as did the Afghan elections. So now where do we move forward? All this, of course, has implications for Iraq, and it has implications for our strategy through the region. As far as our troop levels in Iraq are concerned, which I think is what you were specifically narrowing in on, I think it would be a mistake at this point to schedule a specific timeline unless it comes at the behest of the Iraqi leadership. If the newly elected Iraqi leadership comes to us and says we need to move forward with something very specific because the presence of your troops are very unpopular here, then that is something we would conceivably begin to talk about. But short of that, I think it would be a mistake, and it would be a real victory for the insurgency if we just unilaterally declared that we were going to be withdrawing at a certain timeline.
There are those who argue that the presence of American troops or foreign troops, or there are British and other countries there as well, is in fact a nationalizing, unifying factor for the insurgency, that American forces in effect are a magnet for violence and attacks, at least in some parts of the country, that making a schedule for withdrawal would in fact undermine that whole aspect of the insurgency.
Actually, the insurgency, despite the presence of over 100,000 foreign troops, has not really grown in size or effectiveness really in the last year. If you look at the insurgency, it's basically concentrated to that small area north of Baghdad, northwest of Baghdad, what's called the Sunni Triangle. And even there, while there are a lot of Iraqis in the Sunni areas who are intimidated by the insurgency and don't want to speak out against it, combined with there's no culture of public dissent in Iraq until Sunday, most Iraqis, and certainly most Iraqis in those areas, aren't supporting the insurgency. If Zarqawi tomorrow called all Iraqis to come out and rally behind his cause, you wouldn't see, but for, you know, maybe a couple thousand people come out. There really is no national support, certainly not among the Sunni community, and also in the Shia and Kurd communities. So I don't believe this idea that our foreign troops is growing the insurgency. The insurgency simply has not grown.
If you'd like to join the conversation, our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address, you can stop writing that I misstated the date of the State of the Union. I know it's tomorrow night, not Thursday. You can stop writing us. Anyway, the email address for the rest of you is totn@npr.org. Let's get a caller on the line, and this is Lou, and Lou's calling from Las Vegas.
Hey, gentlemen, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm afraid I failed foreign policy studies in school, but you know, this, my take on it is simply this. No, we shouldn't set any sort of withdrawal date, and we should probably stay there as long as it takes to get the job done, even if that's 20 to 25 years, because the people in that neighborhood who hate us are going to hate us, and we can't change their minds or their hearts. But we can change the minds and hearts of their children, because I don't know any religion on earth that can stand up to the onslaught of Starbucks, McDonald's, and the Gap. So, you know, let's just stay the course. I think sooner or later, they have to join the rest of the world. That neighborhood has to join the rest of the world, quit blaming its problems on the great Western powers. The problems are within, not creating jobs and not giving, you know, not giving people an opportunity to do anything other than, I don't know, go to a mosque.
We're running out of time in this segment, Lou, but I did want to ask, is that your position if American casualties continue to go on at the rate they're going at now?
And I will tell you this, I do not have children, so I do not have to have the possibility of having to face that decision. It's unfortunate when anybody's life is lost, but I think there is a grander notion here. Thanks to all the service people who do risk their lives every day over there in that region.
Lou, thanks very much. I'm afraid we have to stop there. But we appreciate the phone call. Appreciate it. We're going to take a short break. When we return, more on the U.S. role in Iraq. 800-989-8255. Is it time for a clear exit strategy? This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about the role of the U.S. in a post-election Iraq. Should there be a timetable to withdraw troops? A clear exit strategy. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. We're speaking now with Dan Senor, the former spokesman for the Coalition Provisional Authority in Baghdad. In a few minutes, Congressman Marty Meehan, a Democrat from Massachusetts, will join us with a different view. But Dan Senor, the goals of Americans in Iraq are clear. Democratic government, a free market economy, a stable country before its time. Can there be more specific, more quantifiable goals that could be attached to the withdrawal of American forces?
I think at this point it would be very difficult. Look, we were in Germany and in Korea for decades. I'm not suggesting that'll be the case in Iraq. But I do think we have to have some tactical flexibility on the ground when thinking through our long-term planning. We have some important milestones coming up. Obviously, this election was one of them. Then we move to the Iraqis move to the drafting of the permanent constitution. That'll be an arduous process, no doubt. Then the ratification referendum, a second election. There's a third election at the end of this year for what's called the permanent government, or the government that will be elected based on the permanent constitution. Sunday was a big event. There are still some really big events this year. And I think we have to be realistic that having the troops on the ground during these important periods is very important. We just don't know yet the direction some of these events will take us.
Let's get another caller involved in the conversation. This is Stacy, who's with us from Kansas City.
Yes, good afternoon. And I just wanted to make a comment that I think and I feel that the Bush administration would have served the American people and the international community much better if this would have been stated early on as a primary goal of what their intentions were in Iraq, because it appears that everyone has just shifted and moved on to this page about elections and freedom to vote and what we're going to do now. And, of course, from the start, it was about 45 minutes away from mushroom clouds and weapons of mass destruction. And if anyone mentions that today, it's as if that's old news. We're here now. And I just think if this was really a primary goal of theirs, because it sure seems to be getting a lot of attention through the media and the administration, I think they would have served us better just by stating this. But, of course, that sort of cancels out preemption, doesn't it?
Well, to be fair, Stacey, the president did make one speech very much along these lines to the American Enterprise Institute before even the vote in Congress, I think, but certainly before the war in Iraq. And I know that the exact timing, I think, my memory is slipping. But Dan Senor.
Sure, I was at that speech. You're absolutely right. The other point is this. While the focus was on WMD, we were quite clear, the administration was quite clear, that the long-term antidote to terror in that part of the world is starting to stimulate, beginning the process of stimulating reform so governments are held accountable by their citizens. Look, people in that part of the world are understandably very angry. They live with high rates of poverty, illiteracy, they live under political repression, violence from their governments. And they're told to channel that anger into, at best, vitriolic propaganda against America, or at worst, in violence against America, which sometimes culminates in really grotesque and ugly manifestations like what we experienced on September 11th. And until we begin to change that equation, where having a political strategy to empower people in that part of the world to hold their governments accountable for the dreadful socioeconomic conditions under which they live, we aren't going to have a long-term solution to terrorism. And I think the president spoke to that, and that does coincide and justify a policy of preemption, because hoping that a government like Iraq, for instance, which we hope will be a model for the region, hoping that a government like Iraq under Saddam Hussein was going to engage in democratic reforms on its own is quite naive. Unless we change the government and begin to empower the people that want to build a democracy, we really wouldn't have gotten anywhere on that front.
Well, no, and I understand and respect what you said, and I do remember the speech, but I remember multiple speeches on those other issues about danger and imminent threat. There were multiple. Lots of time spent on that issue, internationally and here domestically.
And there's no point that Stacey's right about that.
No, there's no question. We had intelligence that we based the assessment on, and it was the same intelligence that every serious intelligence agency in the Western world had about the threat that Saddam Hussein posed. So I agree with you. We did spend a lot of time talking about a threat we believed was there.
I just wanted to say this also. I mean, I definitely feel that the people are better off today than they were before we went there. I just really feel that I give the Bush administration a lot of credit. There's a lot of smart people involved there, and I think that this was really one of the primary goals. And I just wish that they would have just really put more emphasis on freedom,
okay,
because the American people are really behind the idea that those people are free. I truly believe that. And I'll just leave room for someone else.
Okay, Stacey. Thanks
very
much.
Thank you very much.
I did want to read this comment that was made today at a Senate Foreign Relations hearing by Anthony Cordesman, the respected military analyst. We need clear and unambiguous statements from the President and Secretary of State that refute, he said, the key conspiracy theories that poison our relations and undercut the legitimacy of the Iraqi government. To be specific, we need a clear statement from the president that we will leave the moment the Iraqi government asks us to, that we will phase our forces down as soon as Iraqi forces are ready to do the job, that we will not maintain permanent military bases, that we will not exploit Iraqi oil wealth or the economy, and that we will shift our aid funds to Iraqi control and to benefit Iraqis, insisting only that the uses be validated and that there be no corruption or waste.
Well, the president has been quite clear that if a freely elected Iraqi government does not want our troops there, our troops won't be there. The president has been quite clear that we are not there for Iraqi oil. It's an absurd notion. If we really wanted Iraqi oil, we would have ended the sanctions and cut a deal with Saddam Hussein to ensure cheap oil for us.
You talk to Iraqis today and they say the Americans are here for the oil.
No, actually, that's changed. I agree when I concede that when we first arrived, I was there in April 2003, there was this idea out there among the Iraqis that we're there for oil.
Mm-hmm.
But that definitely changed. That definitely flushed out over the succeeding months. I mean, Iraqis had their criticisms of what we were doing, but the idea that we were there for oil was really diluted with time.
Before we let you go, I need to ask you about a report issued recently by the Special Inspector General for Iraqi Reconstruction.
Mm-hmm.
It said that almost $9 billion the Coalition Provisional Authority handed over to Iraqi officials was never accounted for.
It was accounted for, it just wasn't accounted for along Western accounting standards. And what this Inspector General's office is arguing is that we should have held up the distribution of funds to Iraqis until they could meet Western accounting standards. And they also, this Inspector General says, we should have flooded the Iraqi ministries with American auditors, the equivalent of American minders. Look, our goal was, one thing we heard from Iraqis and from the American military commanders on the ground, get funds out, get Iraqi funds out quickly, and hand as much authority over to Iraqis as soon as possible. We were in the middle of a war, and we were trying to reconstruct an economy and a country. And the idea that we were going to wait the years it would take to set up Western accounting standards before we deployed the funds necessary is about as disconnected from reality on the ground as you can get. I would leave it to the accountant who was sitting in front of his balance sheet back in Washington making that claim. I really wish they would have spent some time with us on the ground and seen for themselves what we were up against.
Dan Senor, thanks very much for being with us.
Good to be with you.
Dan Senor, former spokesman for the Coalition Provisional Authority, joined us here in Studio 3A. And with us now is Congressman Marty Meehan, a Democrat from Massachusetts. He's been calling for a major reduction of U.S. troops in Iraq over the next year. He joins us now by phone from Boston, Massachusetts. Thanks very much, Congressman.
Thank you, Neil. How are you?
Very well, thank you. If you could give us a summary of your points for an exit strategy from Iraq.
Well, I think we need an exit strategy. My ideas are...
We're having a little trouble with Congressman Meehan's cell phone, it sounds like. Let's see if we can get a better line. All right, we're going to try it again because Congressman's cell phone has departed the country. Dan Senor has not left the studio yet, so as long as we have you with us, I wanted to get more on this idea of what would be so wrong to say, for example, training Iraqi forces is going to be clearly the major factor that's going to allow American forces to withdraw from combat or then withdraw from the country. Correct?
Yeah, the administration has been clear. We will withdraw our forces once there's a self-sustaining Iraqi democracy there that can defend itself. Defending itself means defending itself against internal threats like the insurgency, against foreign threats. And to do that, they need a serious security infrastructure, serious security forces. They've made progress. They're better than they used to be, but they're not where they need to be. And once they're there, we'll scale back. But they're not there yet. It would be irresponsible to start pegging a date certain when we would withdraw before those security forces are up and running. It may take more time than our plan indicates. It may take less time, but we don't know that at this point.
U.S. Forces, when they're in another country, negotiate with the government there something called a status of forces agreement. At which stage will the United States negotiate a status of forces agreement with an Iraqi government?
It's a good question. When we were in Iraq, we talked with the Iraqi Governing Council about establishing a status of forces agreement with the interim government, with the appointed interim government. The problem, of course, was it appropriate and would it pose problems for international law to sign a status of forces agreement with a government that was appointed rather than a government that was elected? Now there's an elected government, and I think there are many in the elected government many players in the political parties that will be elected that have said they'd want to do a status of forces agreement. So we'll see.
Again, Dan Senor, thanks very much. We've got Congressman Meehan back on the line. Congressman, are you there?
Yes, I am, Neil.
Oh, this sounds much better. Anyway, if you could give us a summary of your ideas for an exit strategy, troop withdrawal.
Well, the premise is based upon our own State Department polling that shows that 92% of the Iraqis view us as occupiers in the country, and also that 80% would like us to leave and not occupy the country. So I believe that over a period of 12 to 18 months, that we could train Iraqi soldiers and begin the process of withdrawing troops so that by the end of this year, we would be able to withdraw somewhere around a majority of the troops that are there, which would be about 70,000.
The idea being Iraqi troops would take over the primary combat roles.
Well, yeah, they're getting Iraqi troops up front, Iraqi soldiers up front, and putting America in the background. I have confidence that General Petraeus, who's in charge of the training, is doing a much better job than we were initially. So I think this could be accomplished and still achieve our strategic goals.
I understand your point is that this such a politically such a an announcement and these facts would undermine the insurgency. Other people would argue that in fact insurgents would see this as a victory. The Americans are leaving and they're leaving because of our guns and bombs.
Well, I don't think that's true at all. We wouldn't do anything without the Iraqi government doing it. Number one. And I oftentimes hear people say that the insurgents would just wait 18 months till we left. Well, 18 months would certainly be enough.
Oh, the snow up there in New England must have affected all the cell phones. We're again losing Congressman Marty Meehan on the line from Boston. Congressman, one more time, are you there? Well, we're going to make another attempt to reestablish contact with Congressman Meehan. In the meantime, you're listening to Talk of the Nation, which is coming to you from NPR News. And let's get a caller on the line while we wait to reestablish contact with the Congressman. Kareem is with us, also from Boston, we hope on a better line.
Yeah, I'm on a landline, Neil. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I think something we're not addressing is the more, which is maybe a bigger picture thing than the exit strategy, is the re-entry strategy. What happens when a so-called democratic government in Iraq emerges that is very anti-Israel, which is, I think, a prime factor for fighting the war. If you look back at Project for the New American Century reports and so on,
mm-hmm.
hostile to American interests, then what? Do we go back, and how is that determined? Dan Senor would be a good person to ask.
Well, Dan Senor has now left the building, but we hope to get Congressman Meehan back on the line. He is back on the line.
I am on the line, and I'm sorry, but the famous Big Dig Tunnel, I'm actually in it now. That's why we had the problem.
I can feel for him.
My point is that we could defeat the insurgency if basically for 18 months they get ready for us to leave. We could defeat them in that time period.
Kareem's question, he's on the line with us also from Boston. His question is, what about a re-entry strategy? What happens when an Iraqi government we leave in place becomes something that we don't like very much?
Well, look, if we say we get into this saying that we wanted to have elections, and if we don't like the government that is duly elected, then that's going to be too bad for the United States. But we shouldn't be in the process of determining the Iraqi future. That should be done by the Iraqi people. And you can't say you want democracy and elections and then say that you're unhappy with the way the elections turned out.
All right. Kareem, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Congressman, one of the other things that you and other Democrats have been calling for is increased international participation in Iraq. At this stage, do you think the election has changed fundamentally opinions in places like Berlin and Paris, that those governments are in any way going to be involved in sending troops to Iraq?
Neil, I think that every country in the world has to be impressed with millions of people, Iraqi people, risking their lives to vote. I would hope that they could participate more in a way of training Iraqi soldiers. Now, maybe they won't bring them into Iraq, but we're training soldiers and military police in special forces in Jordan. They could participate in Jordan. They could participate in Kuwait and spend some money to help us train these Iraqi forces. And I think Germany and the French and the Russians all should be willing to help us with that.
Let's get another caller on the line, and this is Robert, who's with us from Davis, California.
Yeah, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
Uh-huh.
I'm calling to, and the congressman just expressed it, we seem to be leaving the Iraqis out of this conversation too much. And I'd just be curious as to why, since they've gotten a duly elected government, and our mandate to even be there lifts in 12 months, why aren't they included in most of this conversation?
It is as... go ahead.
Thank you. I'll take my answer off the air.
Thanks for the call, Robert. And we just have to preface that by saying it's unclear who the next government of Iraq will be. The results haven't been tabulated yet. But go ahead, Congressman.
It is. But before I released what I felt was a reasonable, comprehensive exit strategy, I spoke to Prime Minister Alawi and met with him. Contingent upon all of this is an agreement by the Iraqi government to work with us. But what also is very important here is there's not be a perception that the United States is calling the shots of this new Iraqi government. In other words, we need to make sure that we work in concert with them. And obviously, if they really wanted us to stay or really wanted us to go, either way, we've got to comply with their request.
Abdul Aziz al-Hakim, the head of SCIRI, the Supreme Council for the Islamic Revolution in Iraq, a man many think may be the next prime minister, said today, no one welcomes foreign troops in Iraq. We believe in the ability of Iraqis to run their own issues, including the security issue. Of course, this issue could be brought up by the new government. So obviously this is going to be under intense discussion amongst Iraqis, between Iraqis and Americans, and of course here in this country as well. Congressman Meehan, thanks very much for being with us today, and we're glad that tunnel's finally finished.
Yeah, it is finished, and I'm on my way to D.C. Let me just close by saying that there can be no question that we need to work this out with the new Iraqi government. I think we could find a reasonable way to show to the Iraqi people in the world that we're not there as occupiers. That's what we ought to do.
Marty Meehan, Democrat from Massachusetts, thanks very much.
Thanks, Neil.
When we come back from a short break, a company in Michigan tells its employees to quit smoking if they want to keep their job. Is the company going too far? 800-989-8255. It's Talk of the Nation, NPR News.